Do heavenly things tell us about things on earth, or is it the other way around? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host, and my conversation partners are Paul Dibdall and Dave Thomas, colleagues in the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. I'd like to toss that question out to you men and see what kind of truth we can discover today.
I think it goes both ways, Alden. I think that there are some occasions where heavenly things tell us about things on earth, and I think there are also occasions where things on earth tell us about things in heaven.
I'm trying to think of examples, heavenly things telling us about things on earth. How would we...
See, I don't know anything about heavenly things.
Unless it somehow, the knowledge comes to me here on this on this earth, but I suppose through Scripture we're told about things
I'm
that are
presuming
occurring.
That's the
yeah.
case.
Yeah. Well, so I would agree it goes both ways, it seems to me.
But it almost seems like God has to plant an idea in our minds that has ties with our earthly world so that we then can begin to imagine things, but using that earthly image. Now,
I mean, for us to be able to understand anything, it has to somehow connect with something we can conceive of. God has to condescend in a certain sense, even when talking about heavenly things, so that we can understand.
Yeah, and I can give you an example of how an earthly thing is illustrative of things in heaven. And that, I mean, for example, in theology, we talk about humans being made in the image of God. Therefore, we look at human beings and how they're constituted and draw some conclusions or float some opinions about God. Humans have some resemblance to God, and therefore by studying humans you can learn some things about God. Now, you don't absolutize that because, you know, the human experience is very compromised as far as the Bible is concerned, and you don't want to be assuming that because you understand some things about humans you now are able to adequately describe God. But you do end up with clues. That's one example I would give.
Well, in an area that you have some expertise in, Dave, is the marriage relationship is used to illustrate how we might relate to God.
Yep.
Well, Jesus in his parables does this all the time. What's the kingdom of heaven like? The kingdom of heaven is like, and then he gives this worldly example of a farmer or whatever.
Or a child.
Sure.
Now, let me press the issue from Exodus 25, 8 and 9. God says, I want you to make things exactly like the pattern I showed you on the mount. Well, one of the startling things that has come out of archaeological discoveries in the last couple hundred years, is that they discovered that the Israelite sanctuary is very similar to the Canaanite sanctuary. So when God showed the pattern to Moses, he shows him a pattern that is very much like the Canaanite pattern. In other words, to put it bluntly, if you want the people to recognize what a church looks like, you've got to show them something that's recognized as a church.
Mm-hmm.
So you start with that area, but then there are a number of significant differences. Can we note some of those differences?
What are the similarities, first of all? Are there some that can be spoken?
Yeah. There is a most holy place and a holy place.
In a Canaanite sanctuary, too?
Yep.
In other words,
as we talked about last week, where the sanctuary is a way where you can control your access to God. So you have the most holy place, which is the center of God's dwelling, and then you have the holy place, and then you have the courtyard, and so on.
And
so,
you have priests that would
And the other thing that is similar, you have festivals throughout the year, especially at the time of the autumn equinox and the spring equinox. Israelite have festivals there, and the Canaanites do. Now, that's where a huge difference comes in, and we won't explore that here particularly, at least not today, but the Canaanite ones were fertility orgies. You know, you had male and female deities, and there's a huge difference. But it's interesting that God says, all right, they're having a party, we'll have a party too, but it will mean even a fertility party, but we'll show that fertility comes from God.
We used to do this in high school. While other people were having Halloween parties, we had a fall festival.
That's right. And there's one psalm in particular, Psalm 29, that can almost be parallel line for line of a Canaanite hymn to Baal. which I think is intriguing. In other words, the Israelites come in and they say, you think Baal is big and strong and tough? We'll change the names. It is Yahweh who's big and strong and tough. So you have those points of contact, but then there are significant differences as well. So is it easy for us to, or is it important for us to remember that distinction, that the patterns which God shows us are modeled in the first instance on points of contact here, so we need to be a bit careful about absolutizing what the heavenly sanctuary is actually like. Is that a safe warning, or have I pushed things too far?
No, I think it's a safe warning. God's ways, his thoughts are higher than ours. If heaven is something more wonderful than anything we could imagine, then we should be careful about saying this is exactly what it's like mm-hmm. in heaven, I would mm-hmm. think. So I think that's a safe warning, Alden.
Although I would not... I don't think you're suggesting that we should assume that the temple or the tabernacle in heaven is unlike the one down below. I mean, it's quite conceivable that it has two compartments. It might be ideological or not actual. I mean,
but when you get to the Book of Revelation, there's no temple there.
Yeah.
So that's where we get into some difficulty. Now, what I discovered when I was teaching in Germany, that was an amazing experience, because Americans tend to think fairly concretely. That's an important feature of typically an American approach, whereas the Germans will abstract things. And I remember having them read an article by an American theologian who was talking about the sanctuary. And he started off by saying, now let's be honest, we know virtually nothing about what things are really like in heaven. But then as he went on, he used the language, the pictures, but my German students almost at every paragraph were saying, but it's only a symbol. It's only a symbol. It's only a symbol. Now, that was intriguing, because while I admitted that, over the course of that year, I ended up moving away from the concrete images more towards the abstract. In fact, I discovered that at home. I was chattering away about something, and my wife simply responded to me, where'd you get that idea? And all of a sudden, I was awakened to the fact that they're constant harping against, oh, that's...
They'd converted you, Alden.
They'd converted me, and I hadn't realized it. Yeah, that's right.
So. But I also think it's possible I could tell you to do something on this design, but not actually have it could be an idea in my mind. It doesn't have to be, I'm not copying something else.
Yeah, that's true.
Architects create buildings all the time. They design things, but that doesn't mean they have one in the back room that they're working off of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, another point that I would like for us to address here in connection with the well, the title for today's lesson is Heaven on Earth. And again, a number of the models I don't find particularly persuasive. But the one that I am really intrigued about is the body of Christ. Paul develops this, especially in 1 Corinthians. In other words, it is instead of a brick and board sanctuary, it is a sanctuary represented by God's people. In fact, in 1 Corinthians 3, I think it might be even safe enough to read this one, 1 Corinthians 3, there is a passage there about the temple of God. And sometimes people like to use this one as a health reform passage, but it's not a health reform passage, it's a church passage. 1 Corinthians 3, 16 and 17. Don't you know that you yourselves are God's temple? And that God's Spirit dwells in your midst? If anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy that person, for God's temple is sacred, and you together are that temple. This is the corporate image of human beings.
Yeah, because in English, you singular and you plural are indistinguishable.
That's right.
But
and that's some translations.
You plural, all of you right. together are the temple of God.
The NIV, which I was reading, makes that, but many translations don't. In American, we would say you all, but this is a corporate image.
I had a moment of great realization when I discovered that you was plural, because I had always been applying it, as you say, to individuals and particularly how they conduct themselves with the use, you know, in terms of their health. And wow, that verse is far more profound when you realize Paul is saying that God is resident in the community of believers. Yeah. Don't damage it. Don't beat it up.
That's interesting, because I had almost the same kind of aha moment when I discovered that was plural. Wow. You know, this is a church passage. Yeah. Paul?
Well, I just think back to my time as a pastor. There was developing at a certain time a number of discussions about the use of the sanctuary and what sort of behavior and so forth should take place in the sanctuary. Those were the terms that were used, and by that they meant the church building, where, and not just the building, but the specific room where we gathered for our our Sabbath morning services. And I tried to make this point, and it didn't really go over very very well. That from a New Testament perspective, the building is not the sanctuary, but rather the body of believers, the people constitute the sanctuary. Yeah. So.
Now, in a world where a heavenly sanctuary or a sacred building, such as in the Old Testament, don't you think we could make more mileage out of a community where God dwells within the community and in personal relationships? It seems to me that's a place where we could make points of contact with modern people.
Yeah. And I would say, too, though, that I think a sense of place, of sacred space or special place, at least, I think that can be extremely beneficial, and I think maybe we've lost that. We don't have to think of it as the sanctuary, maybe in the same way, but holy places are special and valuable.
Yeah, and I think we've lost that sense of holy time and holy space. You know, everything has become common. So I like that, and I used to be quite a stickler about how people behaved in the church building, but there is no holy building in the New Testament like in the Old Testament. That my devotion to the church building was replaced by a much higher level of devotion and care for people who make up the community.
Well, I want to thank Dave and Paul for helping us with our conversations. Next week, we move on to simply talking about sacrifices. And I want to thank Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer, and all of you for listening in for The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.